Let's turn to Luke 23. Luke chapter 23. As you'll recall, we've been talking about the trials of Jesus, and we've just finished the religious trials, or the trials before the Jews. That was before Annas and Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin. And they ended up, Annas, who had no authority actually at all, except being, he used to be the high priest, was the first one they talked to. Then he took him to the current high priest, Caiaphas, who was his son-in-law, and he kind of pulled the strings there anyway. And then the Sanhedrin, and they came up with the verdict that Jesus was guilty of blasphemy. Of course, it was all a put-up job. We might call it a kangaroo court, because they tried him outside of their legal system. They broke several of their laws that we looked at. But they finally came to the conclusion that he was guilty of blasphemy and therefore should be put to death. Well, there was a problem behind that, or a problem with that. And the problem simply was that they did not have the authority to put anyone to death, because they were a subject nation, subject to the Roman Empire. So they did not have the authority to issue a death sentence. They had to go to the Romans. So that brings us to the civil trials. Remember, six trials altogether, three in front of the Jews, and now we'll look at the three in front of the civil authorities. That will be Pilate, and then he'll send him over to Herod, and Herod will send him back to Pilate again. So there'll be three different hearings or trials under civil authorities. And that will be chapter 3, 1 through 25. First, we have the trial before Pilate. And the first trial before Pilate, I should say, because there will be another. But the first one is discussed in Luke chapter 23, verses 1 through 7. Verse 1 says, "Then the whole body of them got up and brought him before Pilate." And the body of them is talking about the Sanhedrin and the leaders of the Jews. "And they began to accuse him, saying, 'We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king.' So Pilate asked him, saying, 'Are you king of the Jews?' And he answered him and said, 'It is as you say.' Then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, 'I find no guilt in this man.' But they kept insisting, saying, 'He stirs up the people, teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee, even as far as this place.' And when Pilate heard it, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he had learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was in Jerusalem at that time." So the Jews had to have a charge now to get Jesus put to death. And they knew that their charge of blasphemy would not carry any weight with the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire could care less whether a Galilean peasant spoke against the God of the Jews or not. I mean, that was none of their concern. They didn't want anything to do with it. So the Sanhedrin, the Jews, the leaders who were bound and determined to put Jesus to death, had to invent a charge that would stick in front of a Roman court. And as you can see in these verses we read, they make one up. They're lying. And we'll get to that. But he says, they say he refused to pay taxes, forbidding to pay taxes in verse 2. Well, he didn't do that at all. He just said, "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's." And he did not tell them not to pay taxes. So they invented that and said, "Well, he said not to pay taxes, so that's a civil law that he's breaking. He claims to be king of the Jews when the Roman Empire is king of the Jews." So they're making things up. But they have to deliver him over to a civil authority. Look at John 18. You can see that. In John 18, verse 31, when Pilate was trying to get out of the... Pilate, and we'll see this throughout tonight's class, that Pilate tries to get out of sentencing Jesus to death. He doesn't want to do it, and he tries to get out of it in several ways. Well, one of the ways was, you guys, you Jews, take care of this yourself. And that's John 18:31. But in doing so, Pilate said to them, take him yourselves and judge him according to your law. The Jews said to him, we are not permitted to put anyone to death. So they didn't have the authority. That's why they brought him before the civil authorities, because they didn't have the authority to put him to death. In fact, they couldn't do it without permission from the Romans. So he's taken before Pilate. A few things about Pilate. We'll find out tonight that he tried to do everything he could to get rid of this case. He didn't want to hear the case at all. He was very adamantly opposed to it because he just did not want to deal with it. On the other hand, he hated the Jews, and he did not want to grant their request to kill Jesus. But there was a problem with that. The problem is simply this, is that deep down, Pilate was afraid of the Jews because of their numbers. And if they had an uprising, remember, they wouldn't even arrest Jesus in front of the crowds because they were so afraid of the crowds having an uprising. And that would look bad for Pilate to the Roman Empire, because one of their main points in the Roman Empire was the Pax Romana, the peace of Rome. You had to keep the peace if you wanted to be a governor of a province. So he was afraid of the Jews deep down. So to a point, we'll find that Pilate tried to be just in this manner. He's going to find a not guilty verdict. But when it really comes down to it, when his position is threatened, he caves in. And we'll see that this evening. He's going to cave in the end. So the formal charge brought to the Romans, first we should note that the Jews had asked Pilate to condemn Jesus to death without even making a formal accusation. And you find that over in John chapter 18 again. And we'll end up with the same verse we were at just a minute ago, but starting back at verse 28, then they led Jesus from Caiaphas into the praetorium, and it was early, and they themselves did not enter into the praetorium so that they would not be defiled, but might eat the Passover. Therefore Pilate went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? And they answered and said to him, if this man were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you. So what's the charge? There isn't one. You know, he's an evildoer. Take our word for it, is basically what they're saying. We wouldn't have delivered him. So back to verse 31, Pilate tries to throw him right back. We'll take him back and try him according to your legal system. I don't want any part of this. So they asked Pilate to condemn him, first of all, without even making a formal accusation. They just came and said, this guy's an evildoer, you know, put him to death. Now they realize, after Pilate says, no, I won't do that, you're going to have to handle this situation yourselves, even though they didn't have the authority to issue a death sentence, they found that they had to make a formal charge of a civil nature, not blasphemy, because, again, the Roman government didn't care about blasphemy against the God of the Jews. So in Luke 23, 1 and 2, now they're bringing him before Pilate and they're making a formal charge. Verse 2, they began to accuse him, saying, we found this man misleading our nation, forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. So the charge is, first, he had misled the Jewish nation, which, again, the Romans could care less about. But then they say he did this by telling us not to pay taxes to you, which is, of course, a lie. He didn't tell them that. And then the third charge is that his teaching is based on his claim to be a king. Now, in verse 3 and 4, we have the first verdict, so to speak, by the civil authority. In verse 3, it says, "So Pilate asked him, saying, 'Are you the king of the Jews?' And he answered him and said, 'It is as you say.' Then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, 'I find no guilt in this man.'" There's the first verdict. He's innocent. So that's the declaration of innocence. Pilate concluded the charges were motivated by the hatred of the leaders of the Jewish nation against this man Jesus. So he said, "I find no guilt in this man," but they don't drop it. They keep on going. They're insistent now. In verse 5, it says, "But they kept on insisting, saying, 'He stirs up the people, teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee, even as far as this place.'" So the matter was very urgent to them. They wanted to get rid of Jesus, and they wanted it badly. Now, what kind of a charge is this? "He stirs up the people." That's pretty vague, isn't it? They give no examples, no witnesses, no testimony. They just say, "He stirs up the people." So they're really grasping at straws here. So they try to strengthen their position by showing the range of his influence. They say, "Clear back to Galilee, he has influence." And bing, that set a light off in Pilate's head, because that leads to the change of venue in verse 6 and 7. Instead of strengthening their position when they say his influence goes clear back as far as Galilee, the mention of the place Galilee gives Pilate an out. It gives him a chance to dump this off onto somebody else. Why is that? Well, first of all, you know, there's no fair here. Don't look for justice in this trial. Don't look for fairness, because it isn't here. And in fact, most of us have found that there's not all that much fairness in life here on earth. But the Jews lied about him. Back in chapter 20 and verse 1, Luke 20 and verse 21, I'm sorry, where it says, "They questioned him, saying, 'Teacher, we know that you speak and teach correctly, and that you are not partial to any, but teach the way of God in truth. Is it lawful for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not?'" And this is what they just accused him of, right? He said he misled us and ordered us not to pay taxes. Well, what did he say? "But he detected their trickery and said to them, 'Show me a denarius. Whose likeness and inscription does it have?' And they said, 'Caesar's.' And he said to them, 'Then render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's.'" So he didn't tell them not to pay taxes. Quite the opposite. He said, "Pay your taxes, but render to God the things that are God's." So there's no fairness here. John 6. John 6:15. This is where they get the charge that he was saying he was king. But remember what happened when they tried to make him a king. Now, he claimed deity throughout his whole ministry. That's blasphemy. That's the charge that the Jews had against him. That's the charge that the Romans couldn't care less about. But now, they try to make him king of the Jews. They try to make him their political ruler. And in verse 15, it says, "So Jesus, perceiving that they were intending to come and take him by force to make him king, withdrew again to the mountains by himself alone." So there are two charges. Well, he told us we can't pay taxes, and he claims to be king in the sense that Pilate would take it, a political ruler. Those two charges were both lies. So they brought him before the civil authorities with charges that were untrue to try and get him to be put to death. Pilate doesn't want to have anything to do with it. He didn't want to get involved. Have you ever heard that before? Don't want to get involved. So he passed them off. He had found Jesus innocent. That was his verdict. I find no guilt in this man. But he didn't have the courage to say, let him go, because he was afraid of the Jews deep down. Instead, he passed the buck, and he passed it right on to Herod. Now, how did he do that? Now, here we have Jesus before Herod, and that'll be verses 8 through 12 in Luke 23. Starting at verse 8, it says, now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time, because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him. And he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and the scribes were standing there accusing him vehemently. And Herod, with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day, for before they had been enemies with each other. So how did Pilate get Herod to even listen to this case? Well, the charge that Jesus' influence started back in Galilee turned out to be a stroke of genius for the Jews, whether they knew it or not. And that is because Galilee was a hotbed of Jewish revolution against Rome. It was always starting in Galilee. Herod the Great, that was Herod's father, the Herod we're talking about here. Herod the Great, his father, had faced a guerrilla warfare in that area for years. And the zealots, the patriots of Galilee, were always making life hard for the Roman government. Now, according to Roman law, a person was allowed to be tried in the province where the crime was committed. That would have been Pilate's jurisdiction. But when the Jews said his influence goes all the way back to Galilee, where he came from, then another part of Roman law kicked in, and that is Roman law allowed a person to be tried in the province where he belonged in. I mean, Jesus was a Galilean, right? So they said, well, now Herod's in charge of Galilee. We'll send him back there because Roman law allows that he can be tried either in Jerusalem or in Galilee. Now, a little background on Herod. He was in Jerusalem now, apparently for the Passover. And Pilate decided, okay, I've got an idea. I can turn the case over to him because Jesus is a Galilean and it falls under his jurisdiction. See how Pilate tries to pass it off every chance he gets? First, he tried to pass it back to the Jews. Try him yourself according to your laws. Well, we can't put anyone to death. We have to have your permission to do that. So now he tries to put him off onto Herod. Herod, in 4 BC, Herod was made Tetrarch of Galilee and Perea. Those are two provinces in the Roman Empire. And Herod was the son of Herod the Great. And that, when Herod the Great died, his kingdom was divided. And his sons and his son-in-law, Herod, the one that Jesus is before, split up his territory, and they got control of parts of it. And Herod, the one we have here, Herod Antipas, was head of Galilee and Perea. Now, he went on a visit to his half-brother, Herod Philip. There's so many Herods, you need a program to keep them straight in the Bible, but you know, there were Herods all over the place. Herod Philip was his half-brother. And Herod Philip, when Herod Antipas went to visit him, he kind of became infatuated with his half-brother's wife, Herodias. So they eloped. He took off with the wife of his half-brother. Well, John the Baptist rebuked him for that. rebuke them for that. Look at Luke chapter 3. In Luke chapter 3, verse 19 and 20, and we're just getting a little background on Herod here. Verse 19 says, "But when Herod the Tetrarch was reprimanded by him because of Herodias, his brother's wife," the him is John the Baptist there, "and because of all the wicked things which Herod had done, Herod also added this to them all. He locked up John in prison." So John the Baptist is in prison, okay, because he rebuked Herod for running off with his half-brother's wife. At Herod's birthday party, his daughter, well, not his daughter, but Herodias, his wife's daughter, her name was Salome, she danced so well that Herod said, "Boy, you know, this is really cool, the way you dance. I'm going to grant you any request that you make. I'll give you any..." Some of you know what she's going to ask for, right? Yeah, everybody knows that. She asked for John the Baptist's head on a platter. So Herod, well, that's what he said, you know, and he had to do it. You can find that story in Matthew 4, 1 through 12, if you want to go back and read it later. But that's the story of how John the Baptist lost his life. Now later, Herod had heard about Jesus' miracles. Look at Matthew 14, verse 1 and 2. It says, "At the time Herod the Tetrarch heard the news about Jesus and said to his servants, 'This is John the Baptist. He has risen from the dead, and that is why miraculous powers are at work in him.'" So he thought Jesus was John the Baptist, rose back from the dead. Probably a little guilt working on him there, I don't know. But he had heard of Jesus' powers, at any rate, his miracles. Stop at Luke 9 on your way back to Luke 23, and you see in Luke 9, and verse 9, Herod said, "I myself had John beheaded, but who is this man about whom I hear such things?" And he kept trying to see him, talking about Jesus. And he wanted to see him, but why did he want to see him? It's because he heard about Jesus' miracles. Now Herod's motive is given back in Luke 23, verse 8. When it says, "Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time, because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him." He was very glad when he saw Jesus, but the reason he was glad was not that he wanted to try the case. He wasn't interested in the case either. We'll see that in a moment. What he wanted was to see one of Jesus' miracles. It was just for the entertainment value. He wanted to see a real miracle happen. And that's why Jesus totally ignores him. In 9 and 10, you have Jesus' response. He gave no answers at all. In verse 9, it says, "And he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing." So Herod had to be very disappointed. Here he finally got to see this Jesus, and he wouldn't do any tricks for him. You know, Jesus never refused someone who questioned sincerely. But that wasn't Herod's motive. You can see that in the way Jesus responded. He didn't say a word. It was not a sincere question. He didn't want to see a sign of Jesus' power. He wanted to see a magic trick, a miracle. In fact, Herod is the only one that Jesus doesn't say anything to. He doesn't even talk to him. He just stands mute. And the chief priests and the scribes were standing there accusing him vehemently. Now, they're getting worried here. Pilate said he was not guilty. He found the verdict not guilty. Now we come over to Herod, and Herod's losing interest because Jesus won't do a miracle. So they're about jumping up and down now, accusing him. You got to put this guy to death. I mean, he's a bad guy. Take our word for it. was basically their argument. So they weren't taking any chances that Herod would release Jesus. In fact, they would have preferred that Herod had condemned him to death. But Herod, in verse 11, doesn't do what the Jews want, and he doesn't do what Pilate wants either. Pilate wants him to let Jesus go or to have him executed, one or the other, just so it's out of his court. The Jews wanted to have him executed. Herod doesn't do either one. When he couldn't get his miracle, he lost interest in the case. He did not meet the wishes of Pilate or the Jews. Instead, he had no interest in the case itself, so he declined to try it. He sent him on back to Pilate. In fact, we see in the context how he treated Jesus. The contempt shows that he wasn't interested anymore. In verse 11, it says, "And Herod with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe." Gorgeous, lampos is the word gorgeous. It means to radiate light, having a glistening quality. Probably what most scholars say here is that it was a cast-off robe of a person of importance. And they just threw it over him and made fun of him. And the mockery made it plain that Herod didn't take the case seriously at all. He didn't even take it seriously. You know, "I just wanted to see a miracle. He won't do one." So they mocked him and sent him back to Pilate. Now put yourself in Herod's place, though. Here he is, a tetrarch, very important person, and they bring this harmless-looking Jewish peasant from Galilee in and says he's going to overthrow the Roman government, you know. He's going to make the Jews not pay their tax. It's laughable. And that's why Herod took that tack with him. He ridiculed him. You know, "You're not going to do anything to the Roman Empire." He was wrong, of course. I mean, there was Herod standing there with the Son of God right in front of him, and all he could do was make jokes. Herod then makes friends with Pilate in verse 12. Apart from the biblical record that we have here, nothing is known about the quarrel between Herod and Pilate. There's nothing in the extra-biblical history books. I say extra-biblical because the Bible is a history book. But the Bible doesn't say exactly what the argument was either. But they had been arguing, now they're friends. And in fact, if it had been a case of jurisdiction, then Pilate's turning Jesus over to Herod for trial would have been a very gracious gesture. And Herod might have taken it that way, saying, "He's trying to make friends with me by letting me try this case. I'm not interested, but I'll make friends with him anyway and then send the guy back." So it didn't turn out exactly the way Pilate wanted it. Now in verse 13 through 16, we have the sentencing of Jesus. Verse 13 says, "Pilate summoned the chief priests and the rulers and the people, and said to them, 'You brought this man to me as one who incites the people to rebellion. And behold, having examined him before you, I have found no guilt in this man regarding the charges which you make against him. No, nor has Herod, for he sent him back to us. And behold, nothing deserving death has been done by him. Therefore, I will punish him and release him.'" So Pilate proposes a compromise. You know, Luke makes it very clear in all of these cases that Pilate thought Jesus was innocent. He said so again and again. In fact, he states it four times in 23:4, in 23:14 and 15, and verse 22, and in John 18:38, 19:4 and 6. If you want to write all those down, you can look them up. But all of those times, Pilate states, "This man is not guilty. I don't find any guilt in him." So Pilate did everything he could to avoid making a decision. Now try to sense his frustration here. He's afraid of the Jews deep down inside. And first he tried to get the Jews to deal with the whole thing themselves. Remember over in John 18, when we saw that, and he said, why don't you guys go ahead and try this? John 18:31, and they said back, we don't have the authority to put someone to death, so you have to try it. It's in your court. Then he tried to pass the buck to Herod. We just read about that in Luke 23. Then he tried to get the Jews to get Jesus off because it was a custom to release a prisoner on Passover. And the Rome did that for the Jews as a courtesy. And look at Mark chapter 15. So we have another way here that Pilate tries to get Jesus off. In Mark 15 and verse 6, it says, now at the feast, he used to release for them any one prisoner whom they requested. And the man Barabbas had been in prison with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the insurrection. And down in verse 9, it said, Pilate answered them, saying, do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews? So he asked him, why don't you let me release him for a gift, a Passover gift? They wouldn't hear of it. So at every turn, Pilate tried to get Jesus off. He tried to pass the buck. Finally, he tries a compromise here back in Luke 23. He offered to beat Jesus and then release him. In verse 16, he says, therefore I will punish him. That word punish sometimes referred to as scourging, and release him. So he tries to make a deal with him. Look, this guy is innocent. Can you imagine yourself being in a courtroom today and the judge says, okay, I find you innocent. You're to be scourged and then I'll release you. Wait a minute. That's not how you deal with innocent people. You let them go. But he tried to make this compromise in order to save Jesus' life. You know, when it finally came down to it, he had to make the decision himself. He couldn't avoid it. So he ascertained all the facts. Verse 14, back in Luke 23, it said, he said to them, you brought this man to me as one who incites the people to rebellion, and behold, having examined him before you, and that word examined is a word anakrino, that means, according to Bauer, Danker, Arndt, and Gingrich, to engage in a careful study of a question. So he questioned him very carefully. Now, obviously, Luke has left out a lot of the details here. He's hitting the high points. But Pilate apparently questioned Jesus at length in an examination, and he found no guilt. After he had all the facts, he gave the verdict. He's not guilty. This man is not guilty. And he wasn't alone in his decision. Look at verse 15. No, nor has Herod, for he sent him back to us. And his reasoning is he would have never sent him back if he would have been guilty of something. So he says, I find him not guilty. Herod found him not guilty. What should he have said then? The words that follow should be, therefore, you're released from custody. Go on home. Have a nice day. You know, sorry for the inconvenience. But that's not what he did. John 19 gives us an idea why he said this. John 19:12. It says, as a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him, to say the least. He did everything he could to get him off the hook. But the Jews cried out, saying, if you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Everyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar. Therefore, when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out, sat down on the judgment seat at a place called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. He was trying to get him to pass the buck, but when the Jews pulled their he's against Rome card or he's against Caesar card, then Pilate buckled. Why? Well, Pilate was motivated by politics and not by a principle. Gee, does that sound familiar to anybody? Does anybody think about it? Sometimes, and I know I'm a hopeless cynic, and I'm more of a hopeless cynic than most, but sometimes I wonder how many of the people in Washington really care what happens to you and I, and how many are just there because of their own agendas. And I know there are some. I'm not that cynical that I think that everybody in Washington is against me. You know, that would be paranoid. Well, it's not paranoid if everybody's really against you. No, I'm kidding. You know, most of them are there because of their political agenda. They want power for themselves. And that's the way Pilate was. He wasn't any different from any politician today. He was motivated by politics, not by any sense of justice at all. Or his sense of justice, I'll put it this way, went only so far. You know, he tried to get Jesus released. It didn't work. Okay, we'll turn him over. So he makes his concession speech, I guess you'd call it, in verse 24 and 25, back in Luke 23, when he says, "And Pilate pronounced sentence that their demand be granted. And he released the man they were asking for, who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder." And that was Barabbas. Remember, we read that. "And they got him off, but he delivered Jesus to their will." Think about it. There's a trial. The verdict is not guilty. And the sentence is death. That's what just happened here. Everybody he stood before on a civil level said there's no guilt. He's not guilty. So we'll put him to death. Just to appease the Jews, of course, and to further their own agenda of power and keeping power. Now we'll pick up here next week at verse 18, where the mob is going to change its tune from the triumphal entry. And we'll see that there are several reasons why they may have done that. One, it may have been a different mob, and two, it may have been that the triumphal entry didn't turn out exactly as they planned, but we'll pick that up next week. Father, thank you for your word, and thank you for this historical record of the trials of our Lord Jesus Christ. We know that he was condemned on the basis of lies. He was condemned after a verdict of innocent. And this just drives the point home that he died for our sins, not his own. And Father, we thank you for that. In Christ's name, amen.